Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Bad, worse, and even worse martinis today for conservatives. We kind of foreshadowed it at the end of Tuesday's Three Martini Lunch. It was either going to be a jubilant surprise last night or we would be brooding today. And brooding it is. Donald Trump won easily. The race was called. As soon as the final polls closed in Indiana, he won, I believe, by about 17 or 18 points over Ted Cruz. It was never close. I believe Donald Trump won all the congressional districts as well, meaning he got all 57 delegates. And as a result of that math, in addition to the big Trump win and the ongoing momentum, we got this important news from Ted Cruz.
Together, we left it all on the field in Indiana. We gave it everything we've got. But the voters chose another path. And so, with a heavy heart, but with boundless optimism for the long-term future of our nation, we are suspending our campaign.
Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee. Reince Priebus said it himself. Everything is headed now in that direction. And we'll get to some of the ramifications of that in subsequent martinis. But the guy that everybody was laughing at and has virtually no conservative bona fides is about to become the standard bearer for the Republican Party.
Greg, do you remember yesterday when the election was rigged?
Yes.
And the whole system was skewed and they were going to steal it at the convention and all that. I don't hear anything about that this morning, almost as if it was all a tantrum and that these guys only complain. They only think the system is unfair if they're not winning. As long as they're winning, it's fine and it's all hunky-dory. I suppose we should say congratulations to Donald Trump. It does appear he is pretty darn likely to hit that 1,237 delegate threshold. We should point out the irony, Greg, that all the maneuvering by the Cruz campaign to get its people going to Cleveland as delegates, they're going to end up voting for Trump.
Yes.
Because they're obligated on that first ballot. And in all likelihood, there's not going to be that second ballot. So I think it's going to be a bitter, bitter pill to swallow. We will see if Donald Trump makes efforts to unite the party. He did say a couple of nice things about Cruz last night. Naturally, this comes a couple of hours after he accused Ted Cruz's father of having a role in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. A lot of us, Greg, I don't know about you, like if somebody accused your dad of killing JFK, would you concede that night? Wouldn't you want to fight to the end? No one expected Cruz to be quite so conciliatory after this. I mean, clearly it was a loss. Clearly it was pretty obvious that that Trump is going to rock this all the way to Cleveland. This is about the worst case scenario if you're a conservative Republican, because, you know, there's no point in rehashing all the arguments. It's been pretty clear that Trump is not conservative, has no interest in conservative, and the largest plurality in the party, more than 50% of voters in Indiana, are perfectly fine with that. They really have no problems with any of this stuff. The case against Trump has been made and remade and made with every conceivable angle. The Republican Party primary voters have rejected it so far. So we will see how things shake out. The message I have been getting this morning, Greg, is that Never Trump Republicans are small and irrelevant and represent the past, and we're all going to die off, Greg. But also, if Trump loses, it's all our fault.
Got the bases covered either way. No, I think you're right about the electorate, not only in Indiana, but obviously in many other states around the country as well. I think the Ted Cruz debate with the protester the other day was almost a perfect microcosm of the conservative movement, the actual principled conservative movement against the Donald Trump movement. I know there's a lot of people who back Trump would call themselves principled conservatives, but as Ted Cruz tried to make point after point, the guy just kind of smiled and nodded at him and called him Lion Ted and asked him where his Goldman Sachs jacket was. That's kind of exactly how this campaign has gone. And unfortunately, we saw what side has apparently won. But you mentioned the Never Trump movement. And so now the question becomes, as we shift from having Republican and conservative alternatives to Donald Trump to what happens now that he's the presumptive nominee. And we already saw this little stampede of lemmings over to Donald Trump even after he won New York and after he won the five states in the Northeast and certainly after he wins Indiana. Roll Call put out a story last night saying the Stop Trump movement is dead. They quote Rick Santorum's former advisor, John, I don't know if it's Brabender, let's just say that's the way you say it. He says, people have to realize that Trump played by by the rules. The people spoke, and at some point it's time to move on and worry about winning in November. He says this effort to oppose Trump, regardless of what voters are saying, is absurd. You're even seeing much more conservative people than that coming on board. Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, who was an ardent supporter of Ted Cruz, saying it's time now to rally around the presumptive nominee of our party. And even, I know this is going to hurt, Jim, here's Bobby Jindal yesterday on CNN talking about where he stands.
If it comes down to a binary choice between Donald Trump, if he is the nominee, I'm going to be supporting my party's nominee. I'm not happy about it. I don't think he's the best qualified candidate. I don't think he's the one most likely to be successful. But I would vote for him over Hillary Clinton.
Jim, as you put in the morning jolt today, what exactly is the threshold by which people don't fall in line?
I'm not going to say Bobby Jindal is dead to me, Greg. I'm just going to say he's a little comatose to me right now. I find this deeply disappointing. And I'll just give a pretty good example of this. Let's assume that Bobby Jindal meant it when he said in September 10th, you know, of last year, Trump is not a serious candidate. He is a narcissist. He's an egomaniac. The only thing he believes in is himself. He is full of bluster. He has no substance, no understanding of policy, no intellectual curiosity to even learn. He makes it up on the fly. He goes down this list, and finally he says, you know, this is what makes Donald Trump so dangerous. Many people think he's dangerous. They say, well, you wouldn't want somebody like that with such a hothead with his fingers on the... Yeah, that's certainly true. But that's not the real danger. The real danger is that, ironically, Donald Trump could destroy America's chance to be great again. And then last night, he's like, yeah, I guess I'll vote for the guy. Now, he does offer those caveats, and he's not happy about it. I mean, he's not completely retracting all the criticism. If you believe everything Bobby Jindal said in September, and I agree with all of it, you can't vote for the guy. Like, you can't say, unless you're pro-nuclear Holocaust, if you don't think Trump is capable of making America great again, then you can't vote for the guy. And people say, well, you're giving the case to Hillary. You know, yeah, but the question, you know, like, sometimes there, you know, you say the lesser of two evils, or some people moan that the election becomes the evil of two lessers. Look, sometimes there isn't a lesser evil. I can either vote for corrupt, hard-left liberal Hillary who's going to push the country further leftward, or I could vote for the incoherent authoritarian populist demagogue. Neither of those are good enough to, you know, and so there's your possibility of third party. There's talk about a conservative independent bid. I don't think that's going to come to pass. There's no figure who's volunteering to do it, and there's been no unity around one of these other options. But again, if you know, a lot of people are citing the Alexander Hamilton quote that if there's going to be someone we oppose, don't let it be someone who's from within us. Let us oppose them full-throated and openly and obviously. We've had Democratic presidents before. We have not had a completely non-conservative populist demagogue, a Republican president who has no respect for the Constitution. And if you believe that, you know, the Constitution is first and foremost, you have two bad options this year. So I'm sure I'll get a lot of grief for this position, but you know, I'm getting a lot of, hey, bad word, you have to fall in line and unite today arguments, which, you know, I know it'll shock you, Greg. I'm just not finding it that persuasive.
Yeah, I didn't think you probably would find it all that persuasive. But as you mentioned, largely the argument you're getting from those who say it's time to unify is, A, the only thing you're going to do by not supporting Trump is Hillary. And then they, of course, throw Supreme Court nominations out there, and generations of American freedoms will be jeopardized at that point. Does that sway you at all in any way, or is it just basically suggesting that you're taking a complete gamble as opposed to knowing exactly what you're going to get that's going to be horrible?
I mean, this is kind of like the inverse of Mel Kiper, enormous upside. You know, if you believe everything that Trump critics have said so far, unless they were lying, unless they didn't really think he was all that bad, which I don't think that is the case, then the downside, the potential danger to the Constitution is too much. You can't sign on. If things are going to get bad in this country, you can't sign your name onto it and say, yeah, I'm going to help it out.
Amazing. Jim, let's move on to our probably the most depressing martini of the day. Like, those two weren't thoroughly depressing. Martini number three, as you know, today is May 4th. If anyone looks at Jim's Twitter feed, you'll know that right away. Today is May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. It's Star Wars Day. Jim, the conservative movement right now feels like we're at the start of a really depressing scroll at the start of one of the Star Wars films about the state of the conservative movement being in very much of an exile-type position. It's possibly even more bleak than at the beginning of episode 4. The Empire's on the march, and we have no droids, no Ben Kenobi, and perhaps no Princess Leia. So what happens with the conservative movement now? Because even if Trump wins, obviously, we don't have a conservative president. So what does the movement do without someone at the head of the party it's aligned itself with for so long to in any way reflect its principles?
Greg, perhaps the best metaphor for this moment is picture the opening crawl of episode 8. George Lucas is back in charge, and these next two movies will be about Jar Jar. that's the only parallel I can come up with for the sheer depression of the morning. John Gabriel over at Ricochet is a guy I like a lot. And he basically makes an argument of that look, at right now, conservatives have to think about themselves as being the remnant, right? That in other words, that for inexplicable reasons, the country has largely turned its back on the Constitution. The left has basically decided, we're not interested in that. It's too much of an impediment to our views. We don't believe the Second Amendment means anything. We're going to do what we want, and the Constitution is just a tired, dusty old document sitting there in the National Archives with no relevance to our lives today. An unnerving number of Trump supporters and Republicans have looked at this and said, no, we like the way Trump's going to get stuff done. He's a strong man. We need one of those. Who've looked at the abuses of the Obama era and said, no, we want that too. There's a reason the founders wanted separation of powers. There's a reason the voters wanted it hard to get things passed and that you had to build consensus. Basically, what we think of as timeless values, but it doesn't mean they're always going to be timelessly popular. The only thing a conservative really has going for them is that ultimately reality always wins, right? You can keep hiking the minimum wage in order to say, no, this is going to help people. This is going to help people. But sooner or later, the employers start laying people off because they can't afford it, right? You can spin the numbers. You can tell, Obama can run around saying the country is doing better than ever. Andrew Sullivan wrote this piece saying that, the country is now ripe for tyranny. Well, if you think the country's ripe for tyranny, you can't say the Obama years have been good for us. Now, can you? You can say, we're safer because of these policies. But ultimately, you look around the world, you see the world is on fire. You see ISIS on the march. You say, no, we're actually not better off. So you have to believe that ultimately the gap between the rhetoric and the promises and the lies and the grand lies of a progressive and reality will get so big that persuade people that the emperor is wearing clothes. Think about it. In the Soviet Union, right, the state had total power over the media, total power over telling people how great things are going. And then they looked around in their lives and they saw that it wasn't working and that state control hadn't improved their lives. And they had to stand online forever for toilet paper. You're seeing this in Venezuela as well. People recognize eventually that these policies don't work, that centralized planners don't have some great untapped wisdom that will make everyone happy, fulfilling lives. So if you believe in liberty, the wheel never stops turning. And at some point, we will get back on top again, and people will recognize that these values really are timeless. You can't work around them, and that there is no substitute. But unfortunately, we might have to go through some dark years before we get there. Yay!
You understand,
happy Wednesday, everybody.
You understand the frustration. You understand the anger, the gut anger with the way Obama has ruled, and a lot of frustration about the perception and the reality in many cases that the Republicans did not follow through on their promises to stop it. But when you follow the progression, there's just giant question marks how you get from there to Trump. It just doesn't compute. Jim, like you said, happy Wednesday.
Actually, are you looking for something genuinely happy, Greg?
What's that?
As we are taping this podcast, late morning Wednesday, there is word that Kasich is not going to his continued scheduled event in Washington, D.C. He'll be making a statement in Columbus, Ohio at 5 p.m., whether you think that's a good news or bad, I do think it's a fascinating acknowledgement that even reality can catch up to John Kasich.
Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.